Hi, my name's Vic, and it's been 9 months since I last used a Microsoft application. It's also my great pleasure to be here at another LinuxConf on behalf of the RepRap project and the University of Bath. I did a presentation at the last LinuxConf about this strange idea we had for making a fabrication machine called a RepRap. And for those of you that missed that or thought they were turning up to a presentation about printer drivers, we'll have a few slides just to introduce what the heck this mad guy at the front is on about. Okay, in last year's episode, we covered why hardware sucks. This is basically the reason why the RepRap was created. What the heck is a RepRap? Yes, that's probably what you guys who did think it was a printer conference are wondering at the moment. I'll explain the name. I'll tell you why replicators have already taken over the world, and then I'll tell you who the other mad guys who aren't at the front are. All right. So, why hardware sucks? Hardware is generally mass-produced for the average user. That is not you. They are obviously aiming for someone with less taste and more money. And the primary purpose of the hardware is to turn a profit for the manufacturers of said hardware, or to act as a vehicle with which they can sell you other stuff and make more profit. And they go out of their way to make sure that you can't actually do an awful lot about that. And as it says here, more increasingly, they're making it hard for you to actually fix it if it's broken or buggy or not quite performing the way you'd like anyway. And if the only hardware that was mass-produced was like open source, you would be able to go and fix these things yourself. So, the RepRap was required. What is a RepRap? The RepRap is a practical hardware implementation of a von Neumann universal constructor explicitly designed to be subject to Darwinian evolution. Okay, we'll go back over that last bit in a little bit more detail. Von Neumann. Von Neumann is the guy who designed the architecture of the CPU that we know and love today. He had, back in the 1950s, this wondrous idea, which we've wantonly plagiarized, that if you had a computer that could control a robot arm, it would be able to make that robot arm build a computer and another robot arm. And this would be able to make other useful things as well as copy itself. Okay. Mother Nature, of course, beat him to it by a few million years. The cold virus, oh, that thing's whizzing at me. The cold virus doesn't actually reproduce itself. What it does is it goes into your cells and persuades them to make more cold viruses for it. All right? So replication has a lot of biomimetic stuff going on with nature. So, like the virus, we are expecting human beings to supply a RepRap with a pit load of ready-made parts that it can assemble into a complete RepRap. So, we're trying to build a real machine here, not a theoretical concept. So, we're not going to worry about how the heck I'm going to fabricate nuts and bolts, because you guys don't fabricate nuts and bolts. You go down to the hardware store and you buy them. All right. Plastic feedstock, yeah, that's kind of hard to make yourself so far. Motors, all that kind of the sort of stuff that you can actually go down and buy off the shelf. We're not going to bother to make. Right. But all the clever plastic stuff that holds everything in the right place, that's what we're going to make. Okay. And as we get more and more advanced with things that we can produce using this system, as it evolves, as you guys get to tinker with it and improve it, then we require fewer and fewer pieces from the hardware store. And ultimately, we'll start putting our own metal inside these objects so that we can do things like circuit traces and stuff like that. So, the whole thing has to be open source. So you people have the tools to improve it, so you can make anything according to your own design. So you've got all the information that you need to do that, and so you can make as many of them as you like. and it's got to be open source so that when you make some really cool modifications, you can put those improvements back into the project and everybody else benefits from them, just like the software model. Okay. What about grey goo, go these people who read Crichton novels. Okay, grey goo, for those who haven't read awful Crichton novels, is the concept of a little replicating machine that goes around finding bits from the environment and makes copies of itself out of anything it finds lying around, like you. Now, this is generally about as likely as sort of a machine made out of wood going through trees, chopping them down and building copies of itself. But actually, replicating machines already have taken over the world. There's, 6 billion of them odd at the last count, and they do a fairly good job at replicating themselves without the use of manuals. So we'll use these convenient humans to put the RepRaps together for us. Okay, so a RepRap is a replicating rapid prototyper. That's RepRap, all right? Self-replicates, doesn't self-assemble. That's what you guys are for. It exists symbiotically with people. It gives you good stuff, and you help it make itself. And with each generation, it improves, and the previous generation is capable of making the next generation. At this point, I'd like to like you to start thinking about what you might make with one. Okay. Cool. These are the other guys who are in the project and some of our sponsors. It is, in fact, extremely hard to get sponsorship for a device that is going to make much of conventional manufacturing obsolete. For some reason, manufacturers don't want to give you money to do this. Right. But academics aren't fussed, so we have some money from the Nuffield Foundation and Arc University associated organizations, and also very grateful for donations from the open source community. Thank you for all of those who have. The guy, one in from top right with the lesser quantity of hair, is Dr. Adrian Bowyer, and the RepRap project was his idea. The person next to him is Ed Sells, who is his postgrad student who actually does lots of the hard work. The guy below him, in that case, and the one below that is another New Zealander, Simon McAuliffe, who has done a lot of protocols. And we have Zach, and we have Forrest on the other side of the pond. And all these guys are helping do various things in the project. And these are just the most active people. There are a lot of other people doing this who are involved with RepRap. Okay, so how can we do it? Well, it's simple. You have a machine, right, that squirts stuff out, and you move around and sort of catch it in the right place, and you have some kind of hardware to sort of synchronize everything together and, yeah, make it open source all the way. It's simple, huh? Yeah, okay. Been doing this for, a couple of years now? Yeah. We decided to use plastic to build things out of rather than hewing them out of lumps of metal. It's more environmentally friendly. You don't have to make the machine so physically strong because if you've got a router bit going around chewing bits off metal, every time the router bit contacts the metal, whack, there's a shutter goes through the frame. Right? So by depositing plastic in layers, we don't have to make such a robust machine. The whole lot becomes a lot simpler. So we put a rod of plastic with filament here, which is that one's 2.5 millimeters in diameter, through a little nozzle. It was just heated up with nichrome wire and protected by a plaster of Paris and fiberglass jacket. And there's a little thermistor to make sure it doesn't get too hot anymore. Those of you who were here last time will remember it did that. And there's a little light, so I know if it is misbehaving itself. All right. The heat from the nozzle and the heat in the plastic melts a bit of the layer below. So when these things are made, they are actually fused together in one lump. If you manage to tweak around with the sample yet, some of you with inquisitive fingernails may have discovered you can't actually pry the layers apart. They are actually fused solid together. You'll actually distort the object quite nastily before you actually manage to get anything to separate. There are other simpler injection technologies, like, you know, basically a syringe with glycine or polyfiller in it or something like that, a crack filler. And indeed, we do go down that approach. But this is the trusty Mark II extruder. Yeah. And it's basically the cornerstone of the project. It allows us to extrude and control plastic deposition. And what's more, we've built it on an FDM machine. So we have an FDM head built on an FDM machine. All right, where did we get the FDM machine from? It's an extremely expensive strut, this thing that costs about, what was it, 30,000 euros, and it lives somewhere safely out of my reach in Bath University. Fusion deposition modeling. That's the process of putting the layers on it. The patent ran out last year. Okay. So moving the head around. In this prototype, the head stays still, and the bit of wood moves around underneath it. All right. In the one that we're going to build and release as 1.0, we will be moving the head. Okay. The reason is that that we want to move the head using belt drive because it's a lot faster. Okay. These axes are all using the screw rod because, well, it was pretty easy and I knew it would be accurate enough, so I did it with screw rod. We're only going to use screw rod to move things up and down on the vertical axis on the 1.0. And that's because once you turn the motor off on it, it doesn't unwind and lower itself down. And it's reasonably accurate. Plus, it's pretty easy to get hold of screw rod. So belt drive, there is an action shot of this is the filler extruder that extrudes crack in the wall filler. And it moves with a fair clip. And if you make it move too fast, it all topples over sideways. That is belt drive. And we get an accuracy of about 0.1 millimeters positioning in that. We have a control system. It's based on good old-fashioned RS-232, and I'm not ashamed of it. People go, oh, USB, you've got to use USB. No, we can get a USB to serial converter. That's what I've done. All right, and it works. The little micros inside are PICs. They have serial input and output. So we just hook all the processors around in a ring. And for synchronizing, cutting 3D motions, we have a little synchronization line so that everybody can keep the timing right. Software is all in C, compiled under SDCC. So if anybody thinks they can do a better job on Atmel, it's all in C, and please do a better job. And the software on the PC that controls it all is written in Java, and it takes industry standard STL files as input. So you can use Blender or Art of Illusion or SolidWorks or your favorite 3D CAD package for producing models for this machine. You just have to make sure it produces real 3D. 3D that's produced for games, animations, and movies, and so forth, are not always real-world 3D objects. So start printing them and discover they've got a Klein bottle in the middle of them or something like that. They're kind of hard to print. We are moving to put all the circuits and so forth on a standardized board. So we've got one board, does everything. You have one for the extruder, one board for each motor controller, and that's so we can make everything very modular. So if we change the head, we change the controller board with the head, and everything just slots into place in the ring. We use L298 H-bridge drivers, which those of you who've done robotics might be familiar with. And if you're a cheapskate like me, you use power transistors. Stick it all together, does it work? Just let me check. Not really well at the moment. I think it got whacked a bit hard by Emirates. But normally, yes, it does work, and you've got the bits and pieces, and we'll have a go at beating it into shape later on. On the 13th of September last year, we managed to get the thing to produce its own part for the first time. That part is there. And it's still working. Okay. Had a great time in Vienna, by the way. Having a better time here. Yeah. Okay, so what worked over the last year and what didn't? The screw thread extruder, that works great. Okay, polycaprolactone, which is the plastic that we use, that worked great as well. That melts at a low temperature, about 60 Celsius, which is great because it means you can muck around with it without burning your fingerprints off all the time. Depositing on wood, that's good. You've got to have something to deposit it on. If it doesn't stick to what you're depositing it on, then as the plastic cools and shrinks slightly, the corners of your wondrous work of art curl upwards like an old sandwich. All right? And in extremis, detach from the base. On the other hand, if you should make it stick to the base too well, you'll never get this blasted thing off. All right? So depositing on glass, well, you sort of built half an object, and then it would skate around following the head afterwards. Somebody said, hey, try depositing on sandpaper, and yeah, well, that had the predictable effect of squirting hot glue on sandpaper, didn't it? Cooling the output. Yeah, we needed to cool the output. There was some debate over whether we were going to have to warm the plastic up so the layers would fuse, but it turns out, no, we actually have to cool the thing, stop it turning into a little puddle. That worked well. Java GUI, that works. All right, normally graphics Java don't go too well together, but that does. Icing as support, no. That was a great idea in theory. You use ordinary icing as the support material. If you want to do an overhang, right, you've got to have something to overhang onto, otherwise it falls down while you're building it. Right? You can get away with about 45 degrees, you know, the layers will overlap slightly. You can get away with 45 degrees. Any more, splat. So you put some filler underneath. That's what we're using the crack filler for. All right. Now, the original idea of icing sugar was readily available, environmentally friendly, and you can eat it afterwards if it didn't turn out right. So when it actually comes down to it, it takes a long time to dry. So we think, okay, no problem, we'll blow hot air all over it, and it turns into hot syrup. It's a learning experience doing this project. I'm having a great time doing it. So version 1.0 alpha, the Darwin release. Nice picture of Darwin there. What you're actually looking at is Arnie, which is a test bed for the Darwin design. You can see it's got more rods than it should have and some rather large micrometers strapped to it. That's because we were trying to see exactly how accurate it can be, and that's how we know we can get to 0.1 millimeter accuracy with all the motors. So what's it do? Well, we can work in a 300 millimeter cube volume. We will be able to extrude polycaprolactone plastic like that stuff and some form of filler and support material. We've got three axes that we're driving or serial interface. We might be able to make metal heads work on it, but that's not part of the original design spec. It draws 8 amps at 12 volts if everything's turned on. Notice we are sticking to 12 volts, so if all you've got are car batteries or solar power, then you can still use this device. And we are operating system agnostic. We do care if you use Windows or Linux, but if you do happen to be in the unfortunate position of only having Windows, it will still go. All right, and the parts cost $400. All right. We reckon we might even be able to come in under that, and that's not bad for a 3D printer. Okay, we've already met two goals in a RipRap project. A RipRap has made its own parts, and the design has started to evolve on its own. That's why we're calling it a Darwin, the evolution thing. The design improves from one version to the next, just like Linux. So other people have picked up the idea of the RipRap and they're going with it. We've got people building them in Lego. Huh? Meccano. Wood. That's the Mark II extruder there on the right. He didn't have a fabrication machine, he just chopped the pieces out of a block of wood. Metal pipe. Syringes. This guy is making a six-axis Stewart platform using syringes as hydraulic pistons. Yeah, it deserves a clap for the effort, doesn't it? I mean, yeah. And he's got little motorized things to move syringes, and it's quite fascinating.
What do you use in hydraulic
pistons? Probably beer. No, water. To border as far as I know, until he discovers it goes green in sunlight, then I'm sure he'll change it. And there's this wondrous thing made out of hacked up pieces of polypropylene chopping board, which is quite nice. So we ought to give some honorable mention to the Fail at Home guys who were on Slashdot last week. They are making a fabricator too. Theirs is not self-replicating. And it is kind of expensive. $400 worth of acrylic sheet in there for a start, and they're using sort of like linear motors and things, which are sort of out of my budget for a start. And they don't really have an extrusion head, they're just using a syringe to deposit various solvent evaporation plastics and stuff like that. But, you know, it is another approach, and it shows that this concept is now starting to take hold as a concept. Whether it's the RepRap project or somebody else, right, this isn't going to be stopped in a hurry. That's important. Okay, so how the hell do you print a penguin? Well, we put little dots down and do a little join the dots penguin in a graphics package. That package there is Art of Illusion, which is a 3D modeler. Mostly used by animation guys. It's written in Java. Do not let that stop you using it as a graphics package. Seriously. It's very good. It's got a very nice user interface. Nothing like as complicated as Blender to fly. All right? You can use Blender if you want. It's your choice. I use Art of Illusion. So, we then turn that outline into a 2D shape of triangles. So it's now a flat object. And then we chop bits out of it. It's easier to do it at this stage. And then you extrude the flat bit that you've chopped holes out of into a penguin shape. So. And then you save it as an STL file and import it into the RepRap GUI, which then prints out the penguin in layers, and it does this nice crosshatch fill thing inside. And that's all configurable, so you can have a really tight crosshatch so you end up with a solid object, or you can have more looser stuff if you're just doing a test run, or you want something that's a bit more flexible. And then you watch it print. Doesn't quite look like that there, so don't worry about that. I'll fix that later. All right. We've made some other things. We made gears that interlock and actually work. And it's made a name for itself. This is somebody mentioned making a mug earlier. Yes, well, I made myself a little schnapps glass. And it's alcohol proof. And it holds alcohol again and again and again. This is our latest creation, which doesn't look too impressive from the outside. On the inside, this thing is chopped up into a sort of crystalline structure that we can build without using support material, so we don't have to make objects solid if you don't want them to be solid, and they can still have flat tops. Right. We want to put metal in. We've got a metal head. It works. We just haven't got the software handling two materials at the same time yet. That robot was built on an FDM machine, and then all little channels were filled in with low melting point alloy, melts at 80 Celsius. We don't claim originality for this. John Sargrove was doing it with Bakelite radios, stamping zinc into the piece, into the Bakelite to make circuits. And in the future, well, the Mendel prototype version 2.0. We want to use polylactic acid as the feedstock. That's a plastic that's derived from organic materials. It's derived from lactic acid, which you can get from milk waste, You can get it by fermenting potato starch or corn starch. We want to add the metal deposition head to 2.0 as standard, so it's going to be capable of manufacturing its own electronics. You won't have to build the circuit boards. We want an automated head exchange mechanism, so we can have more than three heads. We're going to give it a USB interface, because by then serial interfaces are probably going to be rather hard to come by. And we want to use DC servos and stir steppers, because it's much cheaper. That's why you can buy color printers and scanners really cheap these days. They don't use steppers anymore, they use DC servos. Mendel, by the way, is the guy who did the genetics with the peas, for those of you who don't remember. Right. Far in the future, we have wondered if people might not take the concepts that have been used in RepRap and apply them to nanotechnology, because, you know, we have the same problem. It's easy once you've built a nanotechnology fabricator to build more of them. But nobody's built one yet, so yeah. People have discovered how to make DNA fold into strange shapes. We wonder if it might not be able to fold into the parts necessary to make a RepRap for some of the more sophisticated shapes, use existing shapes that exist in nature, such as viruses or crystals and things like that, instead of screw threads, motors, blah, blah. By the way, the guy who did make this DNA and folded up into a smiley face, when he actually sort of put them all under the electron microscope and looked at it, he said it was really freaky seeing all these little things staring back at you. So, a bit nearer in the future, version 3 maybe, version 9, how long until fabricators are going to be things that exist in everybody's home, same way as, say, a microwave oven, right? RepRaps are going to be doing other things. They're going to be making, they're not an end in themselves, they are going to be making other tools, other machines, little chemical factories, right? You can make your anti-malarial drug where it's required. That eliminates the need for transportation, cooling, storage, that kind of thing. You make organic semiconductors so that things can build the materials necessary to make their own circuits. And you'll see RepRap applications not just on desktop scale, but on the macro scale for building houses. You might have seen there's been house printers in some of the scientific press recently. And I ask that question again, you know, what will you build with yours? That's the RepRap. Okay, now as is traditional, I take a few questions.
How much and how available is the source material?
The source material, as in hardware source or software source?
Sorry, the feedstock. How much does it cost and where can you get it?
Okay, this plastic is sold as polymorph or shape lock or friendly plastic. It's called Polycap Relaxone. It's available from a number of modeling suppliers. We get it made up into filament by sending it to the same people that make the plastic welding rod for all those car repairs for when you have slight accidents in the car park and smash the bumper on your car. Oops, I just killed the microphone. Sorry. Stick it back there again. Right, yeah. And these folks are amenable to taking a load of granules and running them through the machine and producing filament for you. The polylactic acid that we're moving to is available from plastic suppliers. ShapeLock is expensive because it's like used by modelers, so you know, expect to pay tens of dollars a kilo. Polylactic acid, expect to pay $4 a kilo in 20 kilo sacks. Right, but 20 kilos is a lot of constructing. Does that answer your question?
How tough is the result? I mean, how much strain can it take and so on?
Well, how strong is the plastic? Okay, that stuff's about as tough as nylon. And polylactic acid is if you get some of the samples that are floating around, I don't know if I'll ever see them again. The polylactic acid is much more rigid. It's a sort of, what's it used for? Making strawberry products and things like that. Yeah.
You said the construction costs were around about $400 mark.
Yeah.
Could you give us a basic breakdown of that?
Give you a basic breakdown. The things that you'll have to buy are basically you'll need three stepper motors, two gear DC motors, a load of pit controllers. But I mean, you know, most people don't pay for pit controllers; they go to the
Microsoft website.
Yeah, right. And the driver chips. And you'd be surprised how much fastenings add up to. You know, just nuts and bolts. But yeah, it's all lots of little pieces of hardware rather than any great one item costing a huge amount of money. The plastic in it is negligible. I mean, the plastic's going to be a few bucks.
Yeah. Have you thought about using the PICs with inbuilt USB controllers for the interface?
Yes, we have the, is it the 182550?
It's the 184455.
Yeah, there's a series of them. Basically, at the time we were doing the original development, the USB interface code wasn't well supported by SDCC libraries, and the non-USB versions were more readily available from hobbyist stores and so forth. So we went with straight serial and said, look, if you want USB, we're only using a two-wire interface, so any USB to serial device you can lay your hands on should go.
Okay, one last question. Is there somewhere? It seems to me that a rapid manufacturing machine is one of the few things that you don't actually need to be customized. I mean, it's good to have one, but
yeah,
all you're interested in is resolution and volume, and wouldn't it be better to like get it the same way that you get a printer these days?
Well, there are some things you do want to customize. The materials that you use in it, for an example, you may want one that's long and thin for a particular application, like printing signs, for example. Somebody else might want to use it made out of easily cleanable material so they can print chocolate with it or something like that. So there's plenty of customization to be done in the design.
Okay, if we can thank Vic in the normal way.